It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey there, Closet Busters. Yep, you know what time it is. That time that we come to each and every week where we're going to stop closet dwelling, we're going to kick those doors open, and we're going to step out, step up, and step into living our powerful truth here on the Coming Out Lounge. Now, I got to tell you, today, the conversation we're going to have, it's going to go all over the place. I can already tell you that. But the reason I'm going to allow this one to just free flow and go wherever we want it to, because it's about being creative and being in the moment and seeing what happens. The person I'm bringing to the show is a lot like me, kind of found themselves later in life, has stepped into a relationship with a guy and is learning to be, well, a parent in his own right. He's a really creative guy. He's a screenwriter. He's a composer. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. He even at one point was in a band, and they wrote a boy that was kind of a takeoff of Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun, but it was Boys Just Want to Have Sex. Gotta love that. And I don't know, we met a few weeks ago at an event and we connected, and I thought, you know what? This is exactly my type of guy that I want to have on the Coming Out Lounge podcast. Not only does he do all those things I just talked about, but he also helps run a family business, a campground. And so we're just going to kind of dive into, what does this look like when you're kind of your own person, making your own way in the world, grown-up guy, an adult, and yet you come out late in life and you still don't really get taken seriously. Welcome to the podcast, Frank Rogala. Hey, Frank, thanks for being here, man.
Hey, you're very, very welcome.
So I'm really excited to have you here. We met at an event, like I said, a few weeks ago, had a nice conversation. And then I'm like, you know what? This guy should be on the podcast. And I never know when I go to that event. I'm going to give a shout out to the event. It's called The Art of Active Networking by a guy that his name is Mark Sackett. He does them in San Francisco, San Jose, Orange County, Los Angeles, New York. He's done them in Amsterdam. And I walked into this event and there you were. We started having this conversation and lo and behold, well, you're kind of like me. You couldn't get it all figured out until you were a little bit older in life. And suddenly you kicked the door open and said, okay, yep, I'm gay.
Well, you know, and there's a, no one really talks about it, but we're vintage guys. And in our vintage, when we grew up, there wasn't Will and Grace on TV. There wasn't the head of one of the largest corporations in the world that was gay. You know, no one was talking about gay marriage. No, God forbid.
God forbid. I mean, if anything, we were being told, if you're going to do this, you got to go down the road, turn right, go through the woods, go under the bridge, and knock on the door on the side of this cabin and give them a special password to get in. And suddenly there you'd be in a huddled little dark room with a bunch of other people that you think are kind of like you, but you don't really know. So yeah, that's kind of the age you and I grew up in.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I was a kid, it was like that. There was a name, and it wasn't like something they called somebody they liked. Right. And, you know, and I'm a good person. I'm not, you know, something bad I always try to do. So I'm not that bad thing, you know. And so there was just no role models. There's nobody out there to see that there's a future or that this is even a thing, that this is even something that is possible. And no one's talking about, you know, the authenticity of what comes out of you or what that means. If there was not a mold, you just had to fit into the mold that was around you. I mean, I was in Northern Michigan. It's secluded, a village with 800 people in it. And so, you know, I mean, I feel for kids today that are in a situation where they're not being accepted. In my case, it was just completely confusing. And you add on top of that, my brain is not like a lot of people. I'm very creative. I can visualize things, rotate them in 3D. But, you know, on an interpersonal level, I'm a bit autistic. It took me a while to learn to look people in the eyes and to be able to read a room. And even though I've been an entertainer and on stages, I would have to get off and at the time ask my wife, like, how did that go? Because I had no understanding of that. So I was even a little bit more cut off than probably a normal person might be. I have what's called scotopic sensitivity, which also affects my vision. And so it's like my brightness knob is turned up like if you had a TV set and it was too bright, everything's like a little bit too bright for me. And things like text and things kind of move in an odd way. There's halos around them and they kind of run like rivers between them. So, and that causes processing problem in the brain where if you don't get it figured out, you end up just being really exhausted and kind of your brain is using something like 25% of your energy and it will just, you know, sap your nervous system. Those things together kind of conspired to the fact. Now, I was really lucky because the woman that I married, you know, we both just really wanted the best for each other. And I always tried to be authentic with her, with my feelings. And she was probably more responsible for me coming out. And to this day is, you know, supportive and there for me. So I think I'm really lucky because we're talking a 28-year marriage and you've got everything that goes in, everything's settled and in place. And you know, you've got to figure out, well, okay, we worked our whole life so that, you know, we would put everything into your retirement so we could live off it, pay off this, but now we have to split this. And, you know, doing this late in life, I mean, people that have been divorced know how disruptive that is, but
it's not only disruptive from that perspective. And we've touched on this before in the podcast, but I think you're bringing up something that I think is worth touching on again and even bringing some new light to it. There's this spider web that we all weave as we hide in the closet. That's the common thing. But what happens when you've been the baby boomer generation, the spider web has created so many other tentacles to things that take down roots and latch on to stuff that if you're just now coming into your sexuality at 13, 15, 18, 20 in this world today, and I'm not saying it's great everywhere. I'm just saying in this world today, it's a whole different ballgame than it was when we put down our spider web tentacles and said, okay, now I have in-laws and now I have kind of this work environment where we work, we stay in jobs for longer periods of time. And, you know, we build these long-term relationships with our financial well-being and all this stuff. It's a whole different ballgame. And I'm not saying that still doesn't happen because I still get calls weekly of, yeah, I'm married and, you know, I'm 30 some years old or I'm, you know, I actually had a call, believe it or not, in the last 2 weeks from someone who is 24 years old, who is engaged, getting married in 3 months and going, I know I shouldn't go through with this, but I'm just going to, I just need help finding my own way to be okay with this. Just blew my mind.
It's almost like he doesn't feel like he has a choice. Right. He's got everything around him, all the signs that, and he's doing everything, you know, in his mind he's supposed to do. And exactly. It doesn't feel like he has any way out of it.
And you just said it. That's where I think most of us who've been in this realm have been married, in my case, had kids. That's how we felt. We just didn't have a choice. We just had to go through with something to make everything work. Is that pretty much where you went through too?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I started like my health started breaking down and I started realizing I didn't have spare energy. You know, I needed to be, when you're your authentic self, the weight that lifts off you is huge. And I physically couldn't get out of bed for a couple of years. And so I just had to start shedding all the things that were weighing me down. And so
as you shed that stuff, there's other stuff that comes with this. I mean, so how old were you when you came out, Frank?
51, I'd say. 51, yeah.
Okay. And you have brothers, correct?
The difficult thing was, okay, we were talking about the spider web, right?
Yeah.
So my wife is a creative person too. So we used to make these really elaborate Christmas cards and we had a huge mailing list because everybody wanted our Christmas card. It was the big event. And we kind of decided like it was October or November and we were deciding, look, we need to separate. And Christmas was coming up. So we weren't going to be sending out cards. And it's a really big deal with our circle of friends. So I needed to get a hold of my parents because I didn't want them to hear about this from somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I had a clock ticking because I knew this Christmas card thing was it. Well, unbeknownst to me, my mom had been diagnosed with inflammatory breast cancer and I hadn't heard yet. And so And this is a shock to parents, of course.
Sure.
And then my family was incredibly upset with me because they thought that I was inflicting this on her at a time that she didn't need it, and that being selfish. And I had no idea. I was just being authentic, and I didn't want her to be the last person to find out. I mean, how insulting is that to your parent if you can't tell them directly and they have to hear from somebody else? I just thought that was the best way to handle it. And sure. And to deal with it. And the good thing about it, I mean, from my point of view, in fact, this even went into, this all kind of ended up in a screenplay that I put together, and it gets a little touchy because you've got family dynamics and things, and you don't really want to expose or make people look good or bad because they're living a normal life. So I had to fictionalize it a bit, but we had enough time. Inflammatory breast cancer is incredibly deadly, and it's really rare anybody survives it. And she was the kind of woman that didn't have to go to a doctor ever. She was really healthy, and like within a year, she was gone. It was that fast.
Wow.
So, but in that period of time, you know, I had a chance to introduce her to someone I was seeing, and I came in and, you know, she was sitting and showing him my baby pictures and talking, and it was like she had gotten enough over the shock to kind of start processing my relationships in a way that made sense to her. And it was really kind of a gift for both of us, but nobody around us really saw that. They probably still mad at me about it. And it doesn't matter what I say, they've made up their mind that, you know, it was a selfish thing that I did, that I didn't need to do it then, and blah, blah. So, but it ended up, like I said, I think the stress was, it's like pulling a Band-Aid off. You do it quick, and then you take it from there. And the main thing was is that my wife came to talk to her and let her know that she was okay, and she was fine, and she supported me. And that, I know not everybody has that situation, but I felt very grateful for that.
Well, no, everybody does not have that situation, but even, you know, to those listening, it's like, oh, wow, that would be really nice to have that kind of experience unfold. Yes, it is really nice if that kind of experience does unfold. However, even if that experience happens, let's just say that you're about to come out and you are married and your spouse says, okay, I'm cool with this. It may work for you guys, but that's even going to rock the world around you because other people come in with their own preconceived notions of, well, if somebody comes out of the closet, this is what's supposed to happen. This is how you're supposed to be devastated. You're supposed to be gnashing teeth, pulling hair, you know, all this stuff. And so I've seen it happen where, wow, the spouse is actually okay with this. And then everybody else kind of starts to gang up on the spouse going, how can you be okay with this? Why can't, you know, da 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 da. So it's so interesting that these are the dynamics.
You're right.
That start to unfold.
They think they have to follow a script of this is how you react.
Exactly.
This is the proper way to handle this situation. Yes.
And that's why I think coming out is such a, you know, interesting journey. And I'm going to overlay that coming out to say I'm gay, bi, whatever it may be, or to say I'm going to quit my job and become an entrepreneur, or I'm coming out to say, guess what, I have cancer. I mean, or to say I'm an alcoholic or whatever it may be, these coming out journeys we take often don't come with a script for you or the people who are hearing them. But sometimes the people hearing them go, oh, okay, so it's, let's see, oh, this is what you did? Okay, so I'm supposed to go follow this script. And yet, when it doesn't follow that script, that can actually oftentimes be more pervasive to the situation than going, okay, there is no script. Let's just go. What do we do now? How do we do this? So you come out and you've had this scenario, but I know when you and I were talking about you coming on the show, one of the things, and I kind of alluded to it a little bit in the introduction, was being taken seriously. I mean, this late in life, you're going to pull this on us. You really expect us to believe this? I guess that's kind of somewhat how you started to feel with your own family, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends if you're completely, you know, independent outside of it. But, you know, I run a business with my brothers and it's a big business and we're all really occupied with it for the summer months. It's a campground in northern Michigan. And so we have our board meetings and we're voting on things. And I, for instance, there's something totally in my wheelhouse, a technology that I know about. I've handled it for 12 years and we're going to redo it. And any other time, I would have just handled. Now they have no idea. They don't understand it. And they're all digging in and trying to drive me nuts because they just won't trust me. It's like I'm a flake. You know, I can't, even though, you know, over and over and over again, I can prove to them that I do my homework. Everything comes out right. I know what I'm doing. There's deep level of distrust because they feel like, you know, somehow I'm flaky or I fooled them. And it goes beyond that. I was working with a screen author that I had got screenplay rights from her book. Mm-hmm. And I'd worked for 6 years on it, worked with a bunch of extremely talented code. And it was, I literally had 82 production companies asked to read it. It won a lot of awards. And in the midst of this on Christmas Eve, she had heard that I was gay because she was a friend of a friend. And we had been, she was from Northern California. She was coming down and we were interviewing developmentally disabled adults for a audio version of her book. I was going to put that together to kind of raise interest in her book. Literally in writing, she said to me that she didn't want to have her good name associated with me because she had a dark feeling. She kind of thought she was psychic. She had a dark feeling that I was going to molest the developmentally disabled people that we were casting for the audio book. And I have no idea where that came from other than I have a really kind of funny, dark sense of humor. And I remember, the only thing I think of is we were doing a casting thing and the developmentally disabled adults are the ones that are actors. They're just like every other actor. They've got headshots. They're telling you their credits. Right. There's kind of, I don't want to say childlike edge, but there's more of a, maybe it's a bit of a childlike edge. And there was this one guy who was like huge. He was probably close to 7 feet tall. And wherever I looked, he was in my eye line and he was just trying to get my attention. It was just, you know, he knew I was the guy making the decisions and casting her. And so I just, her offhandedly, we were talking about later and I said, I don't know if he would be right for this role. The, you know, she's who? I said, oh, the big one, you know, my boyfriend. I was just being funny. Right.
Right.
And so to her, all of a sudden it triggered off all of this. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I mean, you can Google my name and I've done a lot of things. I have a name. You Google her name. She had nothing, you know, and to say that she was worried about her good name being associated with mine. I was like, okay. Where's,
so it is, but it is interesting this and justifiably so. I'm not going to say it's not justifiable that an element of distrust shows up. I mean, and I will be the first to admit I've said it millions of times, not only on this podcast, but in public and one-on-one with people. Yes. For what I quote did, if that's how you want to look at it, what I quote did coming out late in life, getting married, you know, all this stuff. Yes. There's an element of distrust that you justifiably can have. But you also can have a level of trust that I'm still 99.9% the same guy I've always been. That's just the way it is. You take this one facet of life and you try to make it everything. I remember, you know, years ago when I was on the Ricky Lake show, and, you know, this came up a couple of times on camera, a couple of times when we were off camera during the breaks. And people were throwing things at not only me, but other people who were on stage about this, saying, but you can't be trusted. You can't be trusted. And I remember looking at one person in particular that she just, every time we go to a break, she was the first one on her feet wanting to say something about what had just been said. And I remember looking her in the eye and going, and how do you know you can't trust me based on just what you've seen here on this show today? You don't even know me. You and I have never even had a conversation. We've never sat down. We've never had a cocktail together, let alone a cup of coffee. And you want to throw that at me? I could say the same to you that I can't trust you, but you would say, but you don't know me. And that's the point. You don't know me. And I think sometimes this distrust level just, it comes rolling in as it can with those of us who come out late in life, understand it, but don't make it about everything that we are now. Don't make it about everything. I was laughing as you were talking about your brothers and, you know, part of that I think is probably the male, the lovely male masculine energy of, okay, we can figure this out. We don't need Frank. You know, we're men. We can figure this out too. Mm-hmm. But it's like, really? What's in it for you that you don't think you can trust me being the guy that actually knows about this, that you still have to go this route? It's just, it's pretty amazing to me.
There's like an envelope of experience that followed me. And if I sat and explained it to somebody, I think it registers and they can understand. And that's kind of, it ended up being an element in this last screenplay where I kind of talked about, I remember being in, this kind of came in as a series of flashbacks from doing my parents' funerals and going through old pictures and stuff. And there was a picture of my dad holding me as a baby, and I just had a bath, you know, and I remember him telling me, he says, you know, look, it's sticking out. And you know what that means? I'm like, no. And he says, that means you have to pee, right? So from the time I was that little all the way up to like seventh grade. That was what I thought. No one told me any different. They didn't have sex ed. So I'm in a locker room, seventh grade, getting dressed, and there's other boys getting dressed, and my body's just reacting, probably just more to being undressed than to anything else, because I had no idea even about sexuality. I didn't know I was complete. I hadn't masturbated or anything. And so I had an erection, and to me was like, I didn't even notice. And boy next to me, who had older brothers, started, you know, going off, oh, you know, well, girl's got a boner. Right, and then from then on, I was the fag, the gay, the queer. And so what happened is I started just like anything I could to not be this thing that they were calling me a name of. I did not want to be that, have the names called, fingers pointed, and be tortured. And it went on all the way through high school. And so, you know, it became my thing in life to like not be this thing.
I think that's so common for all of us. You know, all of us don't want to be that thing. And it stems from an era of rejection, not being accepted, you know, not being good enough. And I'm not just talking, folks, about the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender experience. It's a human experience. None of us wants to feel this rejection or the ridicule of, even if it's as simple as, you know, you've got a boner. None of us likes this feeling. It's just part of the human dynamic, the fabric of what makes us human, that we don't want to feel these things.
I think that is exactly true. And it's in Technicolor when you are in junior high. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Totally crazy. But it's also reflective, and I'm going to kind of move us to something that comes really close to home with you being a creative in the entertainment industry, whether it's composing or writing screenplays or doing film or whatever. There's a piece of this that there's a ton of closets in the entertainment industry, because as much as we seem to think, okay, and I'm going to put it in today's quote framework, who knows what tomorrow will be, you know, based especially on where we're going with this current presidential election thing. But I would assume that even though it appears there's a lot of openness in the entertainment industry to those of us of the gay, lesbian persuasion, man, there's a whole lot more closets in the entertainment industry than I think any of us really realize.
Well, I think one of the problems in Hollywood is that they think they understand everything about the issue, too. When you're trying to get something read in Hollywood, it's always the people that are at the lower rung of the ladder that are the first people that see things, the readers.
Right.
And so I deal a lot with those people. And when you've got a screenplay that has to do with, you know, subtleties of everything we're talking about here today, their amygdala short circuits right to, well, that's not a problem anymore. No one cares about that. That's not interesting. And or if that's been taken care of, or and I'm thinking, OK, well, then why do we do films about World War II or the Great Pyramids or whatever? It's a part of human experience that brings you into a new world that you didn't expect and shows you something, makes you feel something, helps you, takes you on a journey.
But Frank, don't you think that's because if you haven't felt or experienced it yourself, then to you, it's not important?
That's exactly it. And that's what I think youth has as its biggest downfall when they're putting these people on as the gatekeepers, mm-hmm. and they don't have the life experience. And you know what it's like to be a kid. You think you know everything.
Sure.
Most of these people, I can just tell by their replies and opinions, are, you know, 20 somethings. Mm-hmm. And I think my best reaction is when I get to a reader who's got a little bit of experience, or it happens to make it through to somebody that's got a few years on them. That's a big issue, that Hollywood on their front line has the most inexperienced and youngest people screening for pretty much every production company.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know why I'm laughing at this right now, but it triggered a podcast that I recently listened to. There's a New York Times bestseller by the name of John Acuff. And then another one, Jonathan Fields. Jonathan's a friend of mine, and he does the Good Life Project podcast. And Jonathan Fields was interviewing John Acuff, and they were talking about, you know, people who meet them and you say, oh, I'm a writer. And then the first question a lot of people will say is, oh, have you written something I would know? And, you know, it's an interesting question. It's typical, one of those typical human reactions. But as you were talking about these younger, and I'm not beating up the younger generation, I want to make sure everybody knows we're not beating you up. We're trying to make a point here. Sometimes things don't get put through that it's because of the lens you're looking at them through. But John Acuff had this really cool response. He goes, yeah, you know, these people these days that finally ask me, you know, have you written something I would know of? He goes, my first response, instead of saying, well, it's this book, this book, this book, he goes, I've started responding, well, it depends on how much of a voracious reader you are. And I thought, okay, touche. That's a really good response, you know, because it's such a freaking stupid question to begin with. But the same thing applies in what you're talking about here, Frank, is I would invite the younger generation, the gatekeepers, or those who think that these things aren't a problem, instead of thinking it's not a problem, and this applies to many of us because, again, we look through our own lens on life, but instead of jumping immediately to, oh, well, that's not a problem anymore, is to ask, so is that a problem still? Is this still an issue? I mean, this podcast alone started because of people like you and me, Frank, you know, people coming out late in life. Now it's morphing into many different kinds of stories and, you know, transgenders, but maybe the question you need to kind of put in front of, you know, these younger people, and what I was thinking as you were talking was, you hand them your script, you know, they're going to go through this and they're going to agree, oh, well, that's not a problem. But maybe when you hand them the script, say, I'd really like you, as you look at this, to remain curious. Just remain curious, because I think that's the piece that's missing these days in humanity. Is if we lose our curiosity, if we lose our questioning, then we become closed-minded and believe we know the answers.
That's pretty powerful. I mean, the skill of listening and being open, not just assuming that you know that person's place, their journey, their what brought them to where they are, is just, you're robbing yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, being able to find out and the richness of life and experience. And the biggest other thing that this drives me crazy about Hollywood is everything comes down to a log line. You get past the log line and then you've got your synopsis. Now, your synopsis is not your script. Right. Your synopsis is like one of the toughest things. Every writer will tell you this too. And there are people that spend more time on their synopsis than they do on their script, because you're trying to, how do you get across when you've got kind of a dark comedy? You can't, it's all about personality, and you get to know these characters and how they're reacting in situations. You can't do that in a page. I actually, in the last couple of days, I dawned on me, I thought, you know, maybe I should take out the sexuality part out of the synopsis so that they've got to get the screenplay in their hands and read it and see the story as it unfolds, and they'll get it that way. Because just getting past the log line and then the synopsis and then getting to the reader, that's a whole jump there. I mean, you're talking like out of my screenplay belonged to what's called Stage 32, and there's 400,000 members in there. And I've gotten probably a larger number of people asking to request to read my screenplay than most writers have. And even so, you know, the number of people that just from reading the synopsis that just assume, you know, because I'm mentioning the word, you know, discovers he's gay late in life, blah, blah, blah. Right. I think I'm shooting myself in the foot. I think I've got to let
I think you're onto something here. Because there is an assumption that happens. And yes, I would love nothing better than that assumption to be true, that this doesn't matter anymore. But I know it does. I know it does because every day I encounter it, every day, in some way, shape, or form. In fact, just a couple of days ago, I got the most beautiful, basically one sentence email. Somebody had gone on my website, filled out, I have a contact form where you can say, hey, I'd like to talk to you about, you know, speaking or, you know, your podcast or, you know, something else. And so I got an email saying, I want to talk to you about something else. And in the line it said, I just wanted you to know I'm a 40-year-old man, married, you know, et cetera. And because of work with my psychologist and listening to your podcast, I have finally had my first gay experience and I'm so happy. Don't tell me this does not exist still in our society. I mean, that's just it's such a huge testament where we still are. So let's talk a little bit. We've got just a few minutes left here. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what you are working on in all the different things you do, but like some of the big things you're working on right now to keep moving your stories and the kind of stories that you share either through music or film or screenwriting. What are you working on, man?
Well, right now, my screenplay, the current one that I've talked about a bit here, is called The Road to Remembering. And it's about a man who has to return home for mother's illness and arrives after she's passed away and then discovers his father, his difficult father, has Alzheimer's. And he decides to stick around and lend a hand when his family doesn't really seem to notice the problem, and ends up, after an old friend visits his father and he notices how his father kind of perks up, he decides to take him on one last trip to see everybody that he knows that's important to him before he forgets everybody forever. So The Road to Remembering, and that's the one that deals with the character who comes out late in life and some of the repercussions and dealing with the family, and it's all part of the story. It's a feature that I'm pitching right now, and you can actually find a webpage for it, theroadtoremembering.com.
Really, really rich and such a beautiful story. I mean, I love just hearing the things you do, because you seem to find a way to find the story within the story within the story to tell, Frank. It's just...
Usually my notes from my screenplay coaches are, okay, you have three movies here. We have to cut this down.
Right, exactly.
Yes, I mean, it originally also dealt with illness too, because I was extremely ill at the time. And it was like dealing with his illness and my illness at the same time. But it got to be, you know, you don't really realize it when you're watching a movie. But a story in a movie has to be like a laser beam. And in order for it to feel right and to bring you through it, I've done a lot of work with, I've actually done films, and we basically wrote the film by doing screen tests. And it's amazing how subtle little things communicate super well. And you don't really realize the power of being in that dark room with that flickering light on the screen, how it just goes right to the deepest parts of your brain and connects. The subtlety and the power of that is just amazing. And when you sit around and talk about it logically in a room and then lay it out and film it and then show it to people, you see, you know, gosh, you don't need all that. You can just use this. You know, it's very powerful too. I've just done a half hour treatment of another feature that I did. Both of them have won a lot of awards, but in Hollywood, they don't even want to hear. They get mad if you tell them about screenwriting awards. It's like the weirdest thing. You know, you think, I've got another screenwriter that's a friend. He's won 12 awards for his screenplay. And I said, don't mention that in a pitch. I'm telling you, that pisses them off. I don't know why. It's like, nobody ever got fired for hiring IBM or, you know, I'm going to read the screenplay because it won a bunch of awards. You'd think that would prompt them, but for some reason, it doesn't mean anything to them. But anyway, that movie was about a home for developmentally disabled adults and kind of taking you into this strange new world, because a few years ago, we disassembled our whole mental health system, and people are either on the streets or they're in these group homes in like a neighborhood, just like any other house. There's a bunch of people in there, and they usually have a staff that isn't necessarily trained real well. They're not being paid real well. And there's a lot of responsibility on these people. And there's a whole new pharmacopoeia of things that's how they deal with it, with all these different medications. It's a world that I didn't know about till I optioned that book. Yeah. So I've made a 30-page treatment of that. And it's immediately, I've became a semi-finalist in a thing that would put me in with a bunch of agents and writers. So now I thought I was sending a writing sample. I didn't realize, because I actually don't have the adaptation rights anymore. I'm going to have to get a hold of her and hopefully work things out.
Cool.
At the time I did it, it was a little bit too edgy. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with developmentally disabled adults, I wanted to make sure that I was respecting them and not exploiting them. And because this book is very, I mean, when you see developmentally disabled people in the movies, they're kind of like always the walking angel.
Sure.
And these are the badass little you know, and I didn't want to like exploit them. But so I went to the Lanterman Foundation and some of these, the lady that got the Napoleon Dynamite doll pulled from Target because it said retard. I got her to read my screenplay, talk to her about it. And because you need to have the development disabled community on your side if you're going to
absolutely
do something like this.
Absolutely.
But they have like entire, you know, groups of, you know, acting groups that for group homes that are things all the time. But nobody's really done justice to that community. So I'm, you know, hoping things go well. I mean, with the amount of knowledge and research that I did, I could write a whole new story, but this would work out. Hopefully we can work things out and maybe she's evolved a bit and we can make
things. Yeah, that's fantastic, man. So, you know, this is the Coming Out Lounge. And one of the things that I would love for you, as a fellow late bloomer, to kind of share, I always ask the question, you know, what would you like to leave with the audience to inspire someone who's in the closet, getting ready to come out, just maybe just came out. But as someone who himself came out late in life, what would be some words of encouragement you'd like to leave for someone?
To me, everything comes down to how much I can enjoy and experience this life and how much energy, how much of my energy that I don't have to waste. Whenever you're wasting energy, you're throwing your life away. You're throwing life energy. You only have so much life force. You have so much time here. And if you can't imagine what it would be like to be your authentic self, you might be in a situation where you completely feel trapped and you feel like you can't express yourself. The steps that you have to do to become your authentic self will free you, and the energy and all of that pretending and having to cover yourself and not be yourself, once that's lifted from your shoulders, your life will go from black and white to color, because you'll have so much more energy to deal with it and be yourself and not have to be spending all of that life force on bottling up who you really are.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So I really want to thank you, Frank, for coming on and sharing yourself today with me and just showing another side of what it really looks like to be out and proud, even in places like Hollywood and the entertainment industry. So I appreciate you, man.
You're welcome. And I can't believe the minute I started talking to you and found out about your book and your podcast, I'm like, whoa, you know, you kind of feel like alone out here in the world, you know?
You do. And that's why this is so important. And that's why, you know, I bring people like Frank on this show, is because I want people to know that there are resources, there are things that you can find that really support you. So if this has supported you today and you feel good about it, you know, share it. Don't share it for me. Don't share it for Frank. Share it because you know it's going to do somebody else some good. And one of the best ways you can share is to literally share the links to these shows, or go on to iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and just, you know, give us a little pat on the back. And if you want to be even closer and tied into the work that I do on a regular basis, go ahead and give us some love on Twitter at Rick Clemons. That's my handle, at Rick Clemons. And use the hashtag for the show, which is The Coming Out Lounge, or hashtag Coming Out Lounge, either one. And boy, with that, I think it's time to wrap it up. Again, as Frank just said, my book is out. The release date happened in mid-March, and this show is airing in April here. So the book's been out for a few weeks. If you want to get a copy of it, you can get it at Amazon, Barnes Noble. It'll soon be available on Audible. You can get a Kindle version. So the book is called Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. It's a late bloomer's guide to coming out. And again, it's another beautiful resource. Maybe it's not for you, but maybe it's for someone that you know may be struggling. And with that, we're all about giving each other love around here. I want to say how much I love you as my listeners, and always showing up to download the podcast and listen to it. So I want to give you a gift and a reminder. Don't ever stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and this has been the Coming Out Lounge. We'll catch you again in just another week.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.